Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I was not as grateful as I should have been to live through what I lived through. But I have, over the past year, I've learned, I've gotten better about it.
Every day is a gift, as Tony Soprano would say.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. The episode you made me watch last night, and he goes, well, I'll be dipped in shit. I've forgotten he said that. I really liked that. I want to bring that. That should be brought back. That's a nice little.
My dad used to say that all the goddamn time.
It's terrific. Really is nice. Also, you had me watch the debut of Furio episode.
Yeah. So that was kind of, now this is
I was like, I remember that guy.
Yeah.
One thing about the episode that you guys had me watch was that it's a tease of an episode, right? Because you think that Gandolfini and Sofia Milos will hook up at the end of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they don't. And that was one sort of example of the show doing their teases the right way.
Yeah.
Like the best example of that was, and I don't mean this, the word tease is very much the wrong word here, but there was the episode where Melfi is sexually assaulted in the parking garage.
Yes, yes.
And she's wrestling during the whole episode with having Tony take out vengeance for her.
Right.
At the end, there's that great scene at the end where he's like, you need anything? And then she's like, no. And then it just cuts. And it's really, really well done. And the show didn't always do that very well. A lot of times the show was like, well, something might happen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then just nothing happens. And you're like, well, this sucked. They just smash cut to black. Nothing happened. No one got shot.
Yeah, there is definitely a similarity between Melfi saying, no, I don't want you to take revenge on my, perpetrator, and Tony being like, no, I will not fuck you, big-titted lady. Like,
yeah. No, it's like, yeah, it's him, set up it's, for the exact same kind of it's, viewer.
It's just standard. As hard. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it was also the first time I had been introduced to the phrase, I don't shit where I eat. So that was a nice, again, nice little turns of phrase peppered all about. And I like, and the episode you guys had me watch was like good and pulpy, like a good episode of TV. And like the thing about The Sopranos is that like, particularly with like the ringerization of like TV recaps and all that shit.
Yes.
Like it gets venerated to such a point where it's like, oh my God, it's art. Every episode.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, God. And stuff. And I'm watching, I'm like, this is a nice, good episode of TV. Like,
yes. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It doesn't have to be more than that. Just a good solid episode of television.
Exactly. Was, you know, no, this is a decidedly anti-art podcast. we have gone through all these episodes and one by one been like, you know, if you take the show as a whole, sure, it's great and all that. But if you watch it one by one, most of the time you're going, yeah, that wasn't a very good episode. On to the next one. That one was just fine.
That show had more annoying detours
than
like any show ever. And like there were like – I just remember like there was like one episode – the famous one where he has his like an extended dream sequence of the plaza and like Annette Bening is in it.
Yeah.
And I remember the internet the next day, like places like Television Without Pity were like, what the fuck was what the fuck was that shit?
Well, you know, sometimes you dream about Annette Bening. Do we want to start? Let's start the episode.
Sure, sure. I'm going to keep some of that because I like some of it.
Do we not start the episode?
No.
This isn't Marin. We don't just...
No, we're going to do a cold open. We are going to do a very Marin-esque opening.
Yeah, I guess we are. Yeah. We're not Marin. We're Marin! Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself a gun, a Sopranos podcast where we go through every episode of The Sopranos and talk about it. As you've probably noticed, it's been a little while since we've had an episode.
Yeah.
It's been Many weeks.
3 weeks since we talked with you.
We apologize for that. Obviously, you know, the new year and all that stuff. But more episodes will keep coming out on a consistent basis. We swear to God.
Today, our guest is Drew McGarry. I don't know why we haven't had him on before now. Formerly of Deadspin, currently of Vice. And where else are you writing for these days?
I write for Gen Magazine, which is part of Medium.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, I got the books and, you know, I'm tipping over advice and, you know, I'm here and there and everywhere for now as we sort of lick our wounds and figure out next steps, you know, after we all left Deadspin. So everything's a bit up in the air. But hey, congratulations to you guys. I heard Spotify bought you for $250 million. So that's terrific.
Yeah. Yep. Well, don't tell Matt. I actually kept 249 of the million and Matt is only getting one.
One of the million?
Yeah.
You know, I would be fine with that, right? If you were like, here's only one of the million, I wouldn't be like, oh, no. Well, then again, yeah. if you took 249, yeah, I guess
you'd
I would
be mad. You'd be
it
mad.
Is weird, but yeah. I'd be mad.
Yeah.
Well, we're glad you're here on our $250 million podcast about The Sopranos. You a fan of The Sopranos?
Yeah, I was. I watched all the episodes when they came out. Mm-hmm. Back when I had HBO, I told Vince before this podcast, I was like, I don't actually have HBO anymore. And he was like, that is the weirdest goddamn thing I
yeah.
ever heard.
Yeah.
No, that's like the but one I thing like, I will pay for above all else.
Yeah.
I'm cheap. I have Netflix for the kids and stuff like that. But like, you know, given that I'm on Cobra right now, I just didn't feel like paying for HBO, which is bad. Like, because,
yeah.
you know, it, all the... All yeah. the monoculture is passing by without me.
Well, I heard that in Pete Buttigieg's Medicare for All Who Want It, their Cobra plan will be have Disney Plus and HBO Max included.
No, actually, if you don't, it's part of the individual mandate. If you don't get health insurance, it's a $7,000 penalty, and they take away your HBO Go password.
Oh, man. Bummer. Yeah. Bummer. But
other people have noticed this, but... on Netflix was the Jim Carrey remake of The Grinch.
Oh,
the
yeah.
movie,
oh, yeah.
Which is awful.
Oh, like, it's the worst. It's the worst.
It's shitty and it's endless. It comes in like 8 installments, like The Hobbit, but like even less justified. And I was looking and I'm watching it because I hadn't watched it for the first time. And I'm like, I'm in my chair, like looking at my phone and looking up at it to like, because my kid has it on. And I'm looking at all the Whoville residents, and I'm like, these motherfuckers all look like Mayor Pete. This sucks.
Oh, they do. That's very true.
He's the mayor
they
of
totally
Whoville.
Do.
He's the mayor of Whoville.
He is the mayor of Whoville.
Absolutely.
All right, well, let's...
We got to start every show with the theme song, so join us for the Pod Yourself a Gun theme song.
Pod. 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 Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast. Oh, good start to every podcast. Playing yeah. the theme song, you know,
it never gets old. Really,
it got old at one point, but then we didn't do the podcast for like a month and a half, and
yeah, it's
now
new again.
It's new again. Yeah. It's come around.
You know, I liked because I hadn't watched the show in ages before you guys asked. I hadn't watched it since the original finale aired HBO.
Yeah,
it aired. And so it was nice to get into the ritual again of like hearing the theme song open the show.
Yeah,
because I liked that ritual every week, every Sunday night of hearing of it starting. Because I was like, oh yeah, now it's time to open the Sopranos action, everybody. Like,
oh, it is a
and
weird.
By the way,
yeah,
if you've ever heard, the original, like the actual full length
yes.
song.
Yes, I have.
That's based off. It sucks.
It's garbage.
It's terrible.
It's garbage. We've talked about this before, but it's one of the worst songs I think I've ever heard, and it's yeah. It's weird because as a Sopranos theme song, it works eventually. Like I remember watching the show and. My big problem was this is the beginning of Prestige TV having 2 minute long mm-hmm, credit sequences mm-hmm. to start the show.
Yes. So, yes, that's right.
So it was like, it was always something I fast forwarded through. And I remember once you got around to Pizza Land, that's when I knew. I was like, okay, we're getting close to the thing. And I always wanted to see who wrote and directed the episode, but the rest of it I didn't give a shit about. But yeah, it does give you that feeling of excitement. It's
Pavlovian eventually.
Yeah, it is. But it is objectively a terrible song.
No, I 100%
yeah,
agree.
It sounds all cool opening up the show. And then like I stole it off on Napster and it was like, this sounds like something... This sounds like James Dolan would write himself.
Oh man!
There's like a dude like being like so long.
Yeah.
Like there's like a spoken word part, and you're like, oh my god, no.
Yeah. Jeez. And lyrically, it's unintelligible.
Yeah.
You don't know what the fuck they're talking about. A blue moon in your eye.
It's just kind of like
that was the gun part.
It's kind of just like boomer gibberish. Like he just smushed like a bunch of weird like boomer catchphrases in there. And you're like, what the fuck?
It's what boomers think rap is. Yeah. They're like, oh, I like that rap song at the beginning. It's like, I don't know if it's that.
Definitely, it has that. It has that white guy who's just a blues man vibe to it.
Oh yeah.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Which is always lethal. That whole sort of like. Like not even Jack White poser, like level, like that's the good level of blues man posering. Like this is like somewhere right around like Blues Brothers 3000.
yeah, this is like writes for an alt weekly and like lives with his mom level white blues man. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
So we are doing from season 2, episode 4, Commendatore. And the synopsis is, and we got this from IMDb, I believe, Tony travels to Italy with Polly and Christopher to jumpstart a car importing business. While Polly and Christopher sample some of the old country's choicest wares, Tony haggles with the head of a powerful Naples family and recruits a valuable new lieutenant named Furio. So I think it's time to go... Take a little trip.
You want to take a trip to the Wayback Machine?
Let's take a trip to the Wayback Machine.
So, Commendatore premiered February 6, 2000. We're almost at the 20th anniversary. I don't right on the dot this time, which
is
weird. So some of the things that were happening around this time, the hijackers seized an Afghan plane with 186 passengers aboard. They demanded the release of jailed opposition leader Ismail Khan.
Interesting.
Yeah. On the New York Daily News headline, see Hillary run. She's making it official with statewide Senate bashes.
Oh, she was doing bashes back then?
Yeah, she was bashing it.
She was bashing it.
She was a bash sister.
Man, she was Wall Street Pete from way back.
McCain pushes hard while Bush goes home to regroup. So I guess McCain was surging in the primaries around this point. There was the Amadou Diallo trial in New York.
Mm.
LA Times, Chechen capital in Russia's grip, Putin declares.
You know, it is an interesting time because remember when we gave a shit about Chechnya? It was just kind of like in the news. It was just like Russia's at war with some sort of Russian Muslim country.
Yeah.
We had no idea what was going on and we liked it. What were our top movies? Go ahead.
No, I think that was the year I gave McCain $5. I was like, that guy's a maverick.
Yeah.
Isn't that also...
That was when David Foster Wallace wrote like his McCain's a maverick essay too, wasn't it? Somewhere around there.
I'm sure that was not a coincidence.
Oh my God.
I was thirsty enough to read David Foster Wallace and then be like, hey, this guy sees things differently.
Wasn't this also...
How naive we were.
This was the time when the Bush oppo against McCain...
It's before, because this is going into... I believe that was in South Carolina. And this may be what turned the tide, because every headline I've been reading for this one and the next episode, it's like, McCain surging, Bush licking wounds.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So this was right before Bush released the McCain oppo that said he had a black child.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was... What is it? Just his... It was just like his Indian adopted daughter or something like that?
I mean, it was just a phone call, so I don't think it happened. But I think the picture maybe lent it...
Crazy.
Yeah, who knows?
You know, primaries used to be a lot more vicious. But we won't get into politics.
They used to be contested in the arena of ideas.
That's right.
Like,
that's right.
Does he have a...
The free market of ideas used to pick the winner every time.
Top movies. Scream 3.
Great movie.
The Hurricane.
Yep.
Stuart Little. Next Friday.
Stuart Little. Written by M. Night Shyamalan.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He did, that was before Sixth Sense, right?
That's right.
Or am I wrong?
I think... No.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I might...
Yeah. No, wait. Sixth Sense is 99.
Well, wait a second. It might have been something that he wrote before the Sixth Sense came
that's
out.
That's probably what it was. He was doing... He probably wrote it before it came out, because if it had been the Sixth Sense and then he wrote Stuart Little... He would have made Stuart dead the whole time, or he would have done some cool twist. You know, that's just.
Yeah, it turns out like Stuart was a cat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The whole time, dude.
Top song was I Knew I Loved You by Savage Garden.
I don't even know that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like minor Savage Garden. I can't even think of it in my head.
It's kind of crazy because it's like, you know, it's another number one hit by Savage Garden. And as far as I know, it never existed. You know,
yeah.
It sucks that there was a time when number one hits, you know, were.
Well, the R&B ones kind of just like washed over me. Like I'd hear them somewhere and yeah. Be like, oh, that's a song.
Yeah, that's true. All right, let's get into this episode. Let's start talking.
Let's
start
get
talking Sopranos.
Into it. Okay, so I love this episode. This is one of my favorites because I think it's like a.
Yeah.
I think it is the seminal Polly episode.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. So here are our Bada B stories. So Tony, Polly, and Chris go to Italy. We get the introduction to Furio. Chris gets an introduction into IV heroin. Angie, Bob, and Sarah wants a divorce. Tony is forced to do business with a woman. And Pussy gets caught with his FBI friend.
Oh, so good.
And murders the witness. So, yeah.
Also, there's a David Chase cameo.
There is. And that's a wonderful scene. In fact, I think we have some audio on that.
Oh.
So this episode's called Commandatory. And this is something that Paulie really, really enjoys.
Commandatory. Cut suckers.
what I love about Pauly in Italy is like, and it's the same with Tony, but Pauly in Italy is really just trying to relive the sequence in Godfather 1 where Michael Corleone goes back to Sicily.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that he doesn't realize that no one gives a shit that they're in Italy. Like, Italians just live in Italy.
Yeah. Well, it's also like, you know, it's like when the Boston guys are throwing up Irish pride on St. Patrick's Day. It's like every Italian in New Jersey is so defined by their Italianness. But, you know, then they actually go over there and they realize they're not really Italian.
Number one, they're not really Italian. And number two, no one gives a shit if you're Italian in Italy. It's just like, okay. It's the look that David Chase gives Paulie when he's like, buongiorno, is just like, it's worthy of someone calling him a cocksucker. Because that's someone who just does not give a shit. Go ahead.
When I lived in the Tri-State area, I just remember there were so many people in like Goomba cosplay who were like, "I'm Italian. What are you gonna do?" Yeah. And you're like,
"Yeah." It's,
and even I, like, obviously I'm not Italian. You can tell by looking at me. But I was like, you know, like, these people are just fucking posers. It was so annoying.
Yeah, yeah. People. I mean, it's kind of this weird white ethnic identity thing where you know, you kind of look to your immigrant ancestors and you take some pride in the old country,
which is a good and necessary evil.
I think it's a good and necessary evil. I don't think there's anything wrong with it, but the problem is that, like, there's a difference between being an Italian who lives in Newark and an actual Italian.
Yeah.
And the same thing with, you know, Irish Americans here. It's like you know, people who are from Ireland are like, you keep calling yourself Irish.
You guys were Irish in the 1830s, I believe.
Why'd you keep calling yourself Irish?
Oh, Jesus doesn't say like it when you say you're Irish.
Jesus doesn't like it when you... My culture is not your fucking costume.
That's where it's like every day is St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, exactly. We have more than one holiday. We have a bunch of Catholic holidays. The ones where Jesus died and he comes back to life.
I tell you, this episode reminded me of my hot take, which is that I hate Pauly. Pauly's like,
interesting.
I know part of the reason it's funny, like they had one line about having to take a shit. Like they always had good timing with people saying they had to take a shit that show.
Yeah.
Like Phil Leotardo has a really good line about once where he's just like, I got to take a shit. And Pauly has one here. And the whole time, Tony's just exasperated, like, you're just a fucking baby. And he is. Through the whole show, he's just a big fucking baby. He's so annoying.
He is.
And one of my hang-ups about the end of the show is that he never got beaten with a bat and left for dead in a cornfield.
Oh, I like Pauly more than that. I always enjoyed... I enjoyed the fact that he was just kind of a man child, just an unmarried man who lived with his mother.
He's the Sopranos Cliff Clavin.
Yeah. I mean, he's the Chet Hanks of the Sopranos.
It works in certain episodes. Like, it kind of works in this one, and it works in Pine Barrens really well.
Yeah.
Other times he's just grating. It's like having a guy Janice around the episode.
That's sure. Interesting.
But see, for me, like, this is peak Pauly because it works. I feel like it works so well in this because, like, Pauly's whole thing is taking pride in being Italian and everything is like, can you believe this? They're making money off espresso and this is our thing. And then he goes to Italy and everybody thinks he's just a dumb asshole because he doesn't want to eat the like squid ink pasta.
Yeah, right. He doesn't understand why they're eating octopus.
And I love that.
Yeah, that was great.
I love that sequence when he's like, hey, you got any spaghetti and gravy? And the Italian guy's perfect. He's like, what do you mean? Grapes? Uva?
Yeah. Grapes. Yeah. No, I mean, I've always found Pauly's I've always found him charming. Like the fact that he is, number one, he believes that he needs to, you know, be like carry on this like Italian heritage that is completely Americanized. Mm-hmm. And also his obsession, because they're all obsessed with movies and movie gangsters, and they all think they're movie gangsters, so they're like constantly trying to live as gangsters do in the movies, and every time he is knocked back down to earth, it kind of like the disintegration of the American mafia, and it's so funny to watch,
and the little glimpses into his real life, like in this episode, and he's like, I never got to come over here, T.
Yeah.
Not like my brother, the doctor, with all his bullshit.
Yeah.
like we just get this small glimpse that his brother is a doctor, and he doesn't talk to his brother. His brother is like well-to-do, and he doesn't talk to him because he's just a dumb shit.
I also like, there's a scene where Pauly's in a room with a hooker.
Oh yeah,
he's trying to be like all big man, like, hey, didn't say you could leave, and the hooker's just bored out of her mind, like picking feet, stuff like that.
But yeah, straight
which
up,
is great. Anytime all the other characters treat Pauly like the joke that he is, then it works.
It's so funny. I love that scene too. I love the fact that at one point he's just like talking to her about like, you know, how wonderful the fruit is in Italy. Yeah. And she's just at the sink, just vigorously washing her pussy. and then she's like, hey, you and me, we're from the same town. We probably know each other, you know, like, and she's just like picking at her feet.
Yeah.
You can tell she's just waiting to get the fuck on out of there, scratching all of her, you know, scratching probably the body lice that she's accumulated over years and years of hooking. It's wonderful. Also, there's this great scene where it's just Pauly's just walking around, and at one point he just sees another old man, and he just goes, "Commendatore," and then the guy goes, "Who are you?" in Italian, and he goes, I'm from America, and just walks away. And the guy goes, are you with NATO? You cut our ski lift cable.
But, so good.
But Paulie does not speak Italian, so he's just like, he's probably saying something that nice and charming.
Yeah.
You know, he's probably saying something we'll respect.
But I wanted to, before we get all the way down there, I wanted to talk about the very first scene.
Yeah.
Because this episode, we skipped over, it starts with a wonderful scene where an obnoxious family gets carjacked.
Oh yeah.
And then
it starts with the FBI warning where they're trying to figure out they're talking about movies, and literally Tony says that his favorite thing in Godfather 1 was going back to Sicily, which is kind of like, you know, that's the beginning of the episode. But then the obnoxious family that gets carjacked,
and then the Churchill, the dog, runs away, which is great. One of the best scenes of the episode, I think.
You got audio?
I don't have audio for that one. Oh, sorry. Yeah. But I do have trivia.
Oh.
So the little rich kid.
Yeah.
He went on to, that's Jason Fuchs. He went on to write Ice Age, Continental Drift, Pan, and Wonder Woman.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah.
All he had to do was have Hollywood connections, probably.
Yeah, and since he was a little child.
Yeah. No, that's amazing.
Well, also, my favorite part of that is that the movie Pan, which was a gritty origin story for Peter Pan, obviously.
That was the Hugh Jackman one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the Dark Knight of Pan.
So first of all, Pan made the blacklist, which is like the year's list of best unproduced scripts.
Yeah, I know.
So Pan made the blacklist. That's, comment on Hollywood number one.
Yep.
Comment on Hollywood number two is that it flopped horribly.
Oh yeah.
And then he just failed upwards to write Wonder Woman.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing though. It's like, if you can get on the blacklist and you can actually get a movie made, I think you're set.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it flopped.
That's true.
Were there any blacklist scripts that became good movies?
I've never,
I know there are, but I can't remember
specifically. But there definitely are a lot of blacklist writers who are currently making their living doing rewrites until they're...
Wait. I'm looking. Argo, American Hustle, The King's Speech, Slumdog Millionaire, Spotlight, The Revenant. No way. These were Hell or High Water. These are on the blacklist.
It's surprising to me, and I refuse to believe it.
Well, sometimes I feel like the blacklist picks ones that they know are going to be that they know are like almost movies, where they're kind of just like.
But isn't the point of the blacklist that they have to have been not sold?
It is, but I think everybody in Hollywood likes to feel smart, so they like. Look, I predicted this winner.
Yeah. That's exactly what.
Who gets to pick these anyway?
Dave Black.
Yeah. Mr. Black. Hello.
Who's Dave? What makes Dave so fancy? Now,
supposedly they're voted on.
I
want to
do one called The White List.
See, there's like shit on here like Manchester by the Sea is on here. Well, Kenneth Lonergan had already been like an established, incredibly famous screenwriter for years.
Also, how the fuck do you read that script and go, oh yeah, this one's a winner. This guy's sad about his dead kids for 2 hours.
Yeah,
awesome.
Yeah. Also, yeah, Dead Kids is a cheat code.
That movie sucked.
Yeah, that movie did suck.
Arrival is on it. Draft Day is on it. That's great. The Equalizer reboot is on it.
I like how they pick a reboot and they're like, this is the best unproduced screenplay in Hollywood.
Jojo Rabbit is on it. Whiplash is on it. That's a great movie.
Yeah, so it's all bullshit because, I mean, Jojo Rabbit was on it. What year was it on the blacklist?
2012, so it took a while. But from 2011, Django Unchained is on it from 2011. Give me
Get
a fuck.
The fuck out of here.
Hey.
And wait, exactly who needs a stepping stone that made Django Unchained?
That's ridiculous. Back to the greatest television show ever made. So one of the great themes of this episode is, I think, the contrast between the way Michael Corleone experienced Italy in Godfather 1 and the way that these Goomba fuckboys experience Italy in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the, I think the moment where that is crystallized is the moment that Tony Soprano gets to meet the mob boss in Naples, Don Vittorio. Like, and it's supposed to, you know, he has this like just completely idealized version of Michael Corleone meeting Don Tomasino in Sicily, and you know,
right?
And he's just thinking, oh man, I'm gonna meet,
hey, paisan.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm gonna meet like a guy. He's gonna give me wisdom, and they have this just wonderful scene, which we'll play a little bit of for you right
now. Don Vittorio. It's an honor.
Wheelchair. A boulevard.
I think something's wrong with the wheelchair.
He say Wilshire Boulevard.
Georgia. Washington. Bridge.
Right. It's very good. George Washington Bridge.
Don't. You give this guy a golf club, he'll probably try to fuck it.
I love that so much, just because, first of all, I love the fact that this is who he ends up meeting, someone who is senile. And I love that Tony is actually so familiar with talking with senile old people that he immediately kind of reverts back to like George Washington Bridge. Very good. Like, he's like, he knows, he's like, oh, shit. I have to talk to this dude like a child now. That's fucking crazy. And it's just...
Well, what's cool is that the episode, because they're going to Italy, so it has that sort of very special episode vibe to it.
Yes.
You know, when you think like, the Sopranos are going to Italy.
Yeah.
And then it turns out to be this sort of big joke about Americans' idea of what being in Italy is supposed to be.
Yes.
Like a stupid, like just the stupidest possible... Like just the dumbest possible assumptions about their own like homeland, and then yes. The homeland's like who the fuck are you? who are you gringo assholes coming?
Exactly. I mean, and another thing that like points that out to me in the episode is when Tony gets on a call with Carm, and she's asking how's the food, and he's like, it's good, a lot of fish. Like he is.
She goes, if it's as bland as this phone call.
yeah, they are fighting the whole time because she really, you know, you could tell she wanted to go to Italy, and you know, this is a business trip, so to speak. But it's just like the idea that like they're having all of this actual Italian food that's not just, you know, what Artie Bucco just cooks up at Vesuvio, and he's just like, you know, why so much fish? He doesn't understand that, like, you know, he's like...
Why does this island keep eating so much fish? Yeah, I don't get it.
Exactly. What, I want a chicken parm. Yeah. You know, like, the guy is... they're trash. And it's wonderful just their realization of their trashiness.
I think this actually is, like, my formative... Because I remember this episode very specifically for whatever reason. I think maybe I just... I saw it at a time where this became like the formative what not to do when you go to Europe kind of guidebook for me.
Yeah.
It's very much like the ultimate the analysis of Americans as the dipshit tourists in Europe.
I have to admit, I did this exact thing when I went to Italy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean,
I went to Milan. I was only there for like one night. It was like one of those like things where I visited my sister in college. She went and did a year abroad, and then we took trains and planes across and spent like no time in every city and called it a trip. It was the fucking worst. But I spent one night in Milan and just went to a random Italian restaurant, and I was like, I'll have the spaghetti, please. and I just ate spaghetti in Milan and was like, this is the best spaghetti I've ever had. And it's only like looking back that I'm just like, yeah, that was probably the worst spaghetti they've ever made, and probably a tourist trap. You know, it's like they know what Americans want, and they'll serve you, you know, they'll you know, set up the trough and pour down the slop and play the Italian music.
I was just thinking about this the other day because I was remembering when I went to Europe in 1997.
Yeah.
And people would, and Americans would deliberately stitch like a Canadian flag onto their backpacks and shit. So that people wouldn't be rude to them for being American. And it's like, what do you have to stitch onto your backpack now?
Yeah.
Make sure no one knows that you're from the biggest asshole country on the planet.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Like, it'd probably be like New Zealand, but New Zealand's flag is so indistinguishable from Australia's that, that they need something besides their actual flag to, they need like an all black flag.
Canada, you only need two words for the accent. You need a boot and against. But like for New Zealand, that's way out of the average American's accent range.
I could do Jermaine. It. No, it's not a problem. I could do it. You just talk like this. Talk about drinking large amounts of ejaculate. When I like to drink my ejaculate, it's something I'll do for protein. It's fun. It's a good time. And it tastes salty. See, I got it.
Yeah, that's Peter Jackson.
But was that Australian?
No, it's like an Australian who's got like something caught in his asshole. That's what New Zealand.
New Zealand is like Australian if they only asked questions.
Yeah.
New Zealand, I just think about every vowel is a short I.
Yeah.
But that's about it. Yeah.
Fush and chops. Gonna hustle fush and chops.
I'm sorry. No, I just sound like the Gersperms woman. Yeah.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
In general, I mean, like, in this episode, their trip to Italy is...
The Pauly arc is just perfect, because he goes over there, he's like, oh, this is going to be the greatest thing that's ever happened in my life. He gets there, he's completely disillusioned, he gets shit on by all the Italians.
He can't take a shit because he doesn't understand how the toilets and bidets work.
He looks like a dumbass, and then he comes home, and the first thing he does is be like, puss.
Oh, you gotta go. Haven't lived.
Every Italian's gotta go there.
You haven't lived until you've told three old strangers, commendatory, and then had them yammer at you about NATO, and then fucked a prostitute who scratched her foot. Like, yeah, it's perfect, because he knows the time he had, but he loves...
No, he wants to hold on to the dream.
He wants to hold on to the dream, the idealized
version. Well, he's so stupid, he had the best time of the bunch.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. I mean, he didn't do... You know, he was like, I'm not here for business, I'm here for pleasure. And and meanwhile, Chrissy's entire arc is just being AWOL, shooting heroin the whole time, which...
Can't argue with that.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. I mean, he maybe, I think, arguably had the best time in Italy.
I've had the same conversation with my wife from the road where, I get sent somewhere fun. I don't go to shoot heroin and...
Yeah, I know.
And hire hookers and stuff like that. But I'll be, like, sent to San Diego or something.
Yeah.
And she'll be like, she'll be like, oh, you get to go to San Diego. And I'm like, it's for work. It's not going to be fun.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll be sipping a Mai Tai on like Ocean Beach or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, it's like you try to do as the Romans do wherever you're at. And sometimes all the Romans do is sit around and, you know, drink coffee.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in so many cities where I'm just like, oh, man, finally here in Boise. You know, what should I do? And it's like brunch. That's what you do. That's what you do everywhere.
Yeah.
You do
can
brunch.
I drink it?
Yeah. You just, I'll have an espresso and an egg. And they're like, welcome to this very unique town. I did jump in a river. Whenever there's a river around, I'll find a river
sure,
and jump
you gotta
in.
Sure, you got to jump in the river. All right. So let's do favorite scene, least favorite scene.
Oh, sure. You start.
All right. So we got to talk about the Elvis impersonator wise guy.
Oh, yeah.
That's like the weirdest character. I love that he's only in this, only in The Sopranos for one episode.
Yeah, he exists to die.
He shows up to be like a weird Elvis impersonator, wise guy, who's also kind of like a lurky weirdo.
Yeah, he's a weirdo who's connected. It's a very strange thing. So basically, Big Pussy and his FBI handler, whose name I keep forgetting, they go to some random, like, you know, Hobby Lobby or some shit, or a toy store.
That's Skip Lipari.
Yeah, Skip Lipari and Pussy go to this, like, toy store, and they get, you know, to meet anonymously.
Store.
It's a party supply store. And then they get found out. All of a sudden, a connected guy shows up, and he's an Elvis impersonator. And he's just like a lot of detail to this character.
Like, that scene is so absurd. It's one of like the most non sequitur.
It is
Sopranos jokes,
and it's like they decide to give you like add some tension to it, where he's like, oh, this is a friend of ours. He's you know, he's actually an FBI agent, but he's a friend of ours, and you know, he's connected out of Delaware, and he's like, Delaware, do I know any wise guys out of Delaware? And the answer is no.
Just like, he also does a thing where he's like, oh, you're from Dover? I live in Dover. New Jersey.
Yeah. It's like, it's the weirdest fucking character. And it's also one of the most obvious setups for a murder.
Yeah.
That's
good. I like a good obvious murder per episode.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
It wasn't like a tangent that ends for no reason. Like, at least someone gets beaten to death at the end.
No, it's true.
It is set a punchline. I love it.
Yeah. And beaten to death with a hammer, which is always fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah.
Why is it always a ball peen hammer? Can't they just use like a regular carpenter's hammer?
I imagine that a trial and error. I think they've tried carpenter's hammers and they decided like ball peen will really kill them.
Is
faster.
It too hard to pull a regular hammer out of a skull?
That's it. That's probably it. Drew, what are your thoughts?
Good old tire iron wouldn't.
Is
in a toir, you know.
Yeah,
tire iron, bat, crowbar.
Yeah,
a small crowbar.
I've been playing this video game where you kill zombies, and a bat with nails in it.
Mm-hmm.
That'll do it.
Okay, but a tire iron, isn't that the one that's like a cross? Like, it's got one going. Isn't that the one? With the
shaped
like a cross.
Yeah, it's shaped like a plus sign.
Yeah, right.
Oh wait, isn't it like an S? Isn't there like one?
I thought that was just a crowbar.
Yeah. Well.
Oh, I'm trying to think.
Well, lead pipe.
I have to go look in the back of my Kia.
We're all too bad at cars to figure.
Anything that's like long and metallic.
Sure.
You know.
But I think if it's shaped like a plus sign, you might have a hard time. I guess is that like a lug?
If you threw it like a shuriken.
Sure.
You throw it like a shuriken star. First, you throw the tire iron, and then you use the ball peen hammer.
Right.
That's what I would do.
Yeah.
I mean, if I were in that situation.
Oh, like it's like an equal cross? No, that's not. Wait, hang on a second. I'm gonna Google tire.
Yeah. Iron. Google it up, dude. Google tire iron.
Yeah. So.
Oh wait. You know what? All right. Some of them are. All right. Some of them are a cross, but there's also one that's just a right angle. And then there's a ratchet on the end of it. And that's the tire.
No,
iron.
You're right. Yeah,
that I'm familiar with for beatings and stabbing.
That's right.
Yeah, that's
I've used that kind of tire iron.
Oh
before.
Yeah, I've beaten guys with that.
Yeah.
I've also, like, whenever I use a tire iron, I'm like, I could beat somebody.
Right.
There's
power. I can't believe
I'm
changing a tire with this. It's so boring.
You could probably beat someone to death with the club. You know, the one that, like,
well,
for your
it would extend while you're trying to beat them with
well,
it.
You would have to just pull it out completely and then beat them.
Yeah, or lock. Yeah, lock it.
Lock it. That's also good. Mm-hmm. Probably strip all the rubber off of it so it doesn't do too much bouncing. Anyways, it was the strangest character. It was a fun character to kill, especially considering... It's almost like they wrote it. They're going like, all right,
see you later, baby.
We got to have it, because it's very important to the Angie Bonpensero arc, where she is deciding that she wants to divorce Big Pussy.
Also, I just want to say that I feel like it's on the list of like 80s and 90s, early 2000s shorthand of like people who would
absolutely.
Make good kill victims, which is like Elvis impersonator. Mime,
yeah,
telemarketer, insurance
that
salesman.
That sounds right.
Yeah, and I think that means you have to play the bumper.
What's that? Oh, it's the 90s?
Yeah, because if there's one thing that's this show is very consistent with early on,
it's the 90s. It's parents are supposed to discuss sex with their children. It's the 90s. It's the 90s.
Yeah, so yeah, I agree completely. Elvis impersonators is a big thing in terms of it being the 90s.
Insurance salesman like Groundhog Day.
Sure. Andrea Bocelli, shout out. I felt maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe he was bigger in the 2000s, but I did feel like
Just him being there is 90s?
Yeah, because Andrea Bocelli is that blind singer, you know, who sings Conte Partiro. And so, yeah, maybe that's not, I don't know. But those are the things I noticed specifically. But what I was saying was the fact that they needed a vehicle for Pussy to, like, ignore his wife, who is currently about to divorce him. Yeah. And, like, you need to know what's, you know, he needs something in his head. So, obviously, they invented this, you know, guy who catches him with Skip. And it's like they were like, well, he can't just be some guy. Let's make him have a backstory. Like, they worked hard on that.
That was
backstory.
A great backstory.
It's a great backstory, and you're kind of sad to see him go.
Yeah.
Well, it's stuff like that that lets you know that a show's well made. Like, if they care that much about like that little bitty thing,
yeah,
then you know, then they put real thought and care into the whole arc of everything. So that's cool.
Yeah, completely.
So Matt, favorite scene, least favorite scene.
I think that my favorite scene in this was I talked about it before. Was the "Are you with NATO? You cut our ski lift cable," and then you know, also part of that sequence, not the same scene, but her the prostitute washing her pussy in the sink.
So question about that.
Go ahead.
So. I would assume that they use a condom because she's a prostitute, but then, like, is she just washing the condom smell out of her pussy, or is she washing actual...
I would assume they did not use a condom.
Okay. Why? Because they're Italian?
Yeah, because you're a dirty people, Vince.
Sure.
You have babies.
Wouldn't you just wash everything if you were near that guy?
I mean, yes.
Regardless of what happened. Even if you were, like, even if you had sex with him in a hazmat suit, like, you're not going to feel clean.
Yeah, she's probably got a pussy that smells like Aqua Velva or Dracar Noir.
I think it would smell like a leather jacket that's been sitting in the closet.
Sure.
Those scenes to me are my favorite. My least favorite is...
Wait, let's get Drew favorite.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Drew. Do you have a favorite scene?
I think it's the money scene at the end where... because they start off the episode, or at least a trip to Italy, with Tony meeting... Sophia Milos, who's like incredibly attractive,
yes,
and also like the boss. And so there's this sexual tension between them the whole episode. And you're like, they're going to hook up or something like that. And it sort of culminates in this meeting where it's like they resolve you think they're going to resolve that tension, but it turns into a business meeting. And it's Tony who actually refuses to shit where he eats and turns it into a business transaction. And that to me was actually really, really compelling. That was a good scene because there was a lot of different layers of tension going on.
Yeah.
And it ended up getting ended up getting a nice deal out of it too. So that was cool.
Yeah, it is kind of it's interesting to watch because there is something powerful about the fact that he for once doesn't you know, lead with his dick. Mm-hmm. Like,
right.
And I think a lot of that had to do with, you know, the tension between Tony and Annalisa. It was Annalisa, right? That was her name?
Yep.
Is that Tony is confused as to there being a woman boss. Like, his whole thing is like, this would never happen in the States. He just doesn't understand it. And he's threatened by it. And I think the big reason he's threatened by it is because he knows that women have this sexual power over him. Mm-hmm. It's a part that he can't control. You know, it's something that, you know, when dealing with a male mob boss, he doesn't have to worry about wanting to fuck them. So I think a lot of the rejecting Annalisa was about the fact that he was like, no, I'm not going to let you have control. And it kind of shows him being a good, you know, a good businessman. He's really trying not to shit where he eats.
Can we talk about the businessman aspect, by the way?
Yeah.
So, like, there's no way he's going to sell a fucking Mercedes, a stolen Mercedes for 90 grand. Like,
I was confused by that.
His opening price is 90 grand. It's like, well, you're not going to sell a stolen car for like 10 grand off the sticker price.
And what was weird about it was he was also like, these go for 120, you know, out here. And I was like, again, that's not a good enough deal. I can't imagine anyone taking that deal.
Also, like, first,
also seemed high. It seemed like a high sticker price for, even though Mercedes are really nice, I don't feel like your average Mercedes SUV costs 120 grand in 2000.
In 2000.
No. Yeah, I don't think that was an accurate sticker price, and I don't think it was enough of a discount for them to be stoked on the deal.
Yeah, I know. It was very weird. I thought about that too, but then I was like, well, what do I know about this, you know, stolen car selling overseas business, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's not my forte in particular, so I just kind of let it go.
He's like, oh, let me get this straight. We do all of the transporting and market finding, and we're going to get 12% on this deal?
Yeah,
that seems weird.
Very weird. Yeah.
Someone failed to watch the Chop Chop tape.
Clearly.
For the episode. Gotta eat more Chop Chop tape.
And I really loved watching the scenes between Tony and Annalisa where they are in businessman mode. Mm-hmm. I have a clip of one of them. It is the Unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
But what are you thinking?
Julio to start.
Julio. Pooh! My dish is a shame. Oh!
Back up.
You're unbelievable.
Oh! Back up.
Yeah, what I loved about...
You did a lot of audio editing.
So
this
hard
episode.
On that one, all right? Because first of all, her "oh" was just so perfect.
Yeah.
And also, at that moment, you know, he is asking for, like, part of the deal is I get Furio, which is... It kind of a weird thing where they have like, listen, can he transfer from this mafia to that mafia?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, I mean, I know people, you know, a lot of times they transfer from one branch of a company to another.
Onboarding is such a pain.
Onboarding is a pain. That's true. And it's nice to have the kind of job security where you can, you know, actually transfer to the Newark branch.
Yeah. Do you think he gets to keep his PTO?
Dude, hopefully. I think that transfer is over. The question is like, is there going to be a standard of living raise? You know, because it's probably way more expensive to live in Newark.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. It's interesting. While I agree with you, Drew, about the scene, you know, about him like rejecting her. I, at the same time, their entire, them in the cave, you know, mm-hmm. the scene with them mm-hmm. in the cave, it felt a little bit like,
I thought it was great until she started psychologizing.
Yeah, that's what it
I
is.
I think the psychiatry is my least favorite part of the show. Even though I know it was like the driving force behind getting it made in the first place.
I like the psychologizing usually. I'm a fan of psychology because I'm dumb. And like as a dumb person, someone telling me psychology makes me go, oh.
Yeah, no, that's actually the best part of the show, I think.
Yeah, me too. I like it because it's like, that is how human beings do that. That's smart. She's got smart. And then I fall in love just like Tony does. You know,
yeah.
I relate to Tony's kind of like, you know, the way he responds to someone telling him psychology, which is to be like, that's very interesting. That's very, very interesting, you know, instead of, but he does a little bit of pushback when she describes him as his own worst enemy. And I have a clip of that.
Got a premonition for me?
You? You are your own worst enemy.
It's no surprise to me, I am my own
worst enemy.
Everybody's their own worst enemies.
Didn't mean to call you that.
Oh, I worked really hard on that one, you guys.
Good job.
Really hard. Yep. But again, the entire scene where they're just talking about, just psychologizing each other, it seemed to be kind of like, it was clear that he was, you know, he says, you remind me of someone back home who I want to fuck.
Yeah, two pseudo-intellectuals
yeah,
jacking off on each other.
By the way, way, I'm stupid. Who is he referring to? Because in the beginning of the scene, I'm thinking that he's talking about his mom, and then it becomes very clear he's not.
No, he's talking about Melfi.
Yeah.
He's talking about his psychiatrist.
Oh, he's talking about
Yeah, or I guess his...
I didn't know at first either. It took me like 30 seconds.
Well, yeah,
to
no. I mean, I thought at first, is like, you remind me of someone back home. You think, wait, maybe his mom, because, you know, his mom is kind of like this, you know, in a way, a mob boss lady who runs a family. And then when he's like, I want to, you know, fuck her, but I don't. I was like, no, she's psychologizing. He's in love with his psychologist. You know, it makes sense.
Yes, that makes sense. I hadn't thought about the Melfi factor. I'm an idiot.
You're not an idiot. You just like psychology, just like me.
So trivia for this episode.
Sure.
So David Chase, who wrote the episode, actually hates the episode, doesn't like to watch it.
Wait.
Why?
He doesn't like the episode?
Yeah, in an interview in 2017, were there any episodes you wish you could do over? And David Chase, the show when they went to Italy, that really wasn't our element. We really didn't know what we were talking about, so I didn't like it as much. And then,
but that's what makes it good, though.
Yeah,
that's
I agree.
That's why it's good.
Ignorance is why it's funny.
Yeah. From the Soprano sessions, in reality, those guys don't really travel. They don't leave their neighborhoods. Maybe they go to Florida or Vegas. And then I think his main issue actually is that he thought Sophia Milos was too sexy for too young and sexy to be Marozuka's boss, or Marozuka's wife.
Right.
I wasn't happy with the cast. Annalisa did not really seem like a mob housewife or a mob wife.
Well, I don't know what the fuck he's talking. That's weird to me.
Yeah, she's really good in it.
She's fantastic in it.
I think because it sounds like what he wanted was a little more on the nose, because like there's the whole subplot about Carmela being, you know, the mob wife who kind of just lets her husband do whatever and is kind of meek, you know, not meek personally, but, you know, she puts up with his bullshit.
Yeah.
And then I feel like the episode they used what's her face, Annalisa, as like a counterpoint to that, where she's like the actual boss.
Yeah, totally.
And so Tony's not used to it.
Actually,
so I don't know.
Actually, the scene I liked least from the episode had Carmela doing a mob boss thing and trying to convince Pussy's wife not to leave him. And that was the most, and like, I know why that scene existed and it was well done, but I also hated it at the same time because I hated Carmela doing that.
Yeah, I did too, but I did like the line that it led up to, which was, "We'll let the Pope live with them then."
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, that's a good line.
And it also, I did think it served a pretty important purpose in that, like, Carmela's entire arc in this episode, or plot, or whatever you want to call it, I don't know words, but is that she is, you know, in seeing the disintegration of the Bombancero family and the fact that, you know, Angie actually wants to leave her husband, like, to her, it is, that's a almost, it reflects back on her a little bit. It's like a referendum on like her own choices to like deal with the philandering and the, you know, leaving and the, you know, the implicit.
Plus it's going to wreck their violence. Whole little deal.
Yeah.
Well, and Janice points that out to her in the episode. She doesn't like her at all.
In one of my favorite Janice scenes ever. I love that scene so much because it's Janice being Janice, like, you know, doing this passive aggressive, you know, kind of mean-spirited thing, but that's just wrapped up in this, like, you know, faux feminist, like, bullshit that she learned in, like, community college, and then not understanding that she's falling into the same traps by, like, being with, what's
Richie that? Aprile.
Richie Aprile. I have some audio from that as well. It is
I got it.
Janice, yeah.
You are talking about me. About us.
Carmela, no. I don't know. That a woman of your intelligence was content to ask so little from life and from herself. I don't know. It's none of my business.
Marriage is a holy sacrament.
Okay.
Family is a sacred institution.
Roger.
And you, trying to fan the flames with Richie Aprile of all people? Talk about old school.
Carm, Richie, because of his life experience in prison, he has a sensitivity to the plight of women.
Oh, my God. I am not even going to touch that one. But you had me going for a while there. You really did. Oh, Janice, honey. I gotta love you. Really?
She really is like the best fucking actress. Because I mean,
she's the best actress.
I mean, it's perfect because all of her religious bullshit is so clearly like a defense mechanism.
Yeah, but so is Janice's.
But even she doesn't really believe in it.
Right.
Whereas when she realizes that Janice is a hypocrite, she's like, oh, now I have something to push up back on that I actually believe in, which is great.
Yeah, and that's the thing. But Janice is also the same way. She's, you know, her kind of like, you know, selective liberalism is the same thing. She doesn't believe in anything fucking either.
Oh, it's the old Joaquin Phoenix at the Oscars.
Yeah.
I like that. I know I'm like totally going off on a tangent here, but I love the idea. So because he's dating, might be married to Rooney Mara.
Joaquin Phoenix?
Yeah.
Wow.
So he's like the scion, or he's like dating like the scion of like two different billionaire families, pretty sure.
Wow.
And so of course when he makes like an environmental statement, it's not like about, you know, private jets or wealth inequality or like, or, you know, anything that could actually fix the problem. It's like, you know, this is about consumer choice and I'm sick of people putting milk in their coffee.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a completely complete tangent, but that is very much that kind of selective liberalism.
Definitely. She is she's definitely like Oscars award speech.
Yes.
Liberal.
All her scenes are like having an actual relative visit, which is why I always say
she is on
the
line.
She's the realist.
Like she's so perfect real. That it kind of like makes me itchy.
Totally.
Yeah, that sounds about
right. It's too real. She makes me actually anxious and annoyed. Like it feels which is just a testament to how good she is and how well written the character is. But like, man, does she make me mad.
I don't think I've seen her in anything since The Sopranos.
Neither have I. No, I don't know where she's at. She's great.
You know what? That's not uncommon among that cast, though. True. It ain't like Tony Sirico is like headlining The Irishman or anything like that.
Yeah, but Tony Sirico is not John Turturro's sibling.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. All it says to me is we could probably get them on this podcast.
It's true. Yeah.
I also, can I just say that scene in particular where she says that Richie has a sensitivity to the plight of women being that he was in prison. And she goes, I'm not going to touch that. Are they talking about butt sex?
I assume so. Yeah.
I mean, I don't think Janice is talking about
it. He hasn't been around women for 20 years, but he has been raped.
Yeah,
so.
He's been raped. God. Yeah, it did seem like she, at least Carm, was specifically like envisioning prison rape. Anyways.
I mean, this episode's totally worth it for introducing Furio, who's one of the best characters in the series, I think.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't think we get to see him until I think next season.
Next episode. Very next episode. A lot of Furio in the very next episode.
Oh, a little fact check.
Yeah.
Oh, well, doing a little live fact check on Matty Leiby, huh? Well, fuck you, dude. I know about Sopranos just fine. In terms of some of our other segments, like Gabba Vafangul, I didn't notice anything new. The problem is they're in Italy.
Right.
So I'm like, a lot of these words are just, you know, they're Italian. And what we're really focusing in the segment, Gabba Vafangul, is Merigan, like Italian slang.
Yeah.
So I didn't notice any in this episode.
I think it's next episode where they go into the mozzarella.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well,
because Furio's a cheesemaker. We don't really talk about Furio being a cheesemaker in this episode, but apparently in the next episode he starts making the cheese. Yeah.
That is interesting. I don't remember that at all. This is like my fifth rewatch, and I do not remember that Furio is a cheesemaker.
Well, that's a tease for the next episode. See what I did there?
You're going to have to stick around. Let's see. Final thoughts on this episode. Any final thoughts?
I mean, to me, this is one of my favorite episodes.
Really?
Yeah. I love this episode.
Really?
I mean, maybe it's because it's like so food-based, but it's one of the ones that sticks out in my mind, and it's just because I think it's peak Pauly, and I think we needed the contrast of Italy to show you who all these characters really are, because otherwise... Yeah. You would sort of take them as, you know, oh, this is like you would take their bullshit more at face value.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think that like everything that David Chase critiqued the episode on is why the episode's good. Like right. The fact that he's like, well, these guys don't really leave the neighborhood. And it's like, yeah, that's why it's wonderful to see them. Because I think it's not a huge stretch of the imagination to imagine that some New Jersey mob guys might plan a trip to Italy at some point.
We didn't talk about Christopher being like, I don't care what happens, but I'm going to go see that fucking crater. And everybody's like, all right, man, like, go ahead. No one's stopping
you. Yeah, he's like, I'm here for two things, the topless beaches and that fucking crater. And it's like, and he spends the whole time just shooting heroin.
Yeah, well.
I like that he had a sort of anthropological goal in mind. Like, yes. He sure wanted to see something enriching. He didn't get to do it, but still.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he's that guy. That's his character, is that he wants to do something cultural, but and he only ever half gets there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, he doesn't have the patience, and he doesn't have he just doesn't have the emotional stability to follow through on the things that he wants to do in life, which is like, I mean, can we all not relate to that a little bit?
Mm-hmm,
we're all a little bit Chrissy.
It me. I feel seen.
It me. Yeah. All in all, I thought that this is not one of my favorite episodes. I enjoy it a lot, but it's almost like exists outside of the canon in a way. It feels like it does kind of...
I think maybe that's why it's memorable.
Yeah,
it's a departure.
That's true. And a lot of those episodes that are like that, you know, where they diverge and they're not necessarily trying to push a plot forward... it's, you know, a lot of those are some of the best episodes of The Sopranos. This is definitely
some
good.
Of the worst too, though.
That's exactly. And some are the worst. It's really you never know what you're going to get when they do kind of like a something that diverges from the season arc. But all in all, I thought it was good, and I do love watching New Jersey Guidos in Italy. Mm-hmm. I could watch that all day. So yeah, what else we got? We got any emails? Any no?
No.
Cool.
Well, Drew, final thoughts?
Yeah, final thoughts, Drew.
I just want to thank Vince for giving me his HBO password so I can watch all the real sex I could possibly want. So many old butts. Great.
Go nuts.
Go nuts, dude.
Yeah,
that's what it's for.
Like a wild man.
Yeah, that's good shit, dude. That's good shit. A lot of titties.
We got to ask you about you though, because we haven't had you on. Since you had your brain thing,
yep.
Life good?
Yeah, brain strong. I'm alive, half deaf, but that's all right. I can deal.
Yeah, I'm half deaf too. Which ear?
Oh, you are?
Yeah,
I'm half deaf in the right ear.
I'm half deaf in the right ear. Yeah, me too.
Wow, so that makes us practically related.
Yeah, dude, we're like the same person. I lost it completely randomly though. I guess you'd lost it randomly too, but mine was just sudden hearing loss. It just happened all of a sudden. No kidding. Yeah, it was wild. Whereas,
did you get like the cross hearing aids or get a cochlear implant or any of that stuff?
No, it was like one of those things where after I lost the hearing, I took about for a week a round of steroids because they're like, it's probably a virus, because they did like x-rays and, you know, all that shit, CAT scan or whatever, to see if there was something actually wrong, something in the eardrum or whatever. And it was nothing. And so they gave me a round of steroids, and then I got some of the high-end and low-end frequencies back, but my mid is completely gone. And they were like, you know, your brain will kind of like just figure it out. You won't really notice after a while. Do you want a hearing aid? And I was like, I guess not. And so I've just been living without it.
Oh, yeah.
What about
you? I wish.
You got
I have hearing aids and a cochlear implant. So scrambled. I scrambled right away to recover as much as I possibly could. The implant's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
That's interesting. So you must have – so you lost – did you lose almost full hearing in that ear?
I lost all the hearing on the right side of my ear, and it turned out my left ear was damaged as well. And so at the beginning, I had a hearing aid that for both ears, and one transferred sound over to the only working ear. And then I got a cochlear implant, which restored essentially brought sound back to the other side of my head, but in a very garbled and interesting way, but it works. It's good.
Hey, well, I'm happy it works, and I'm happy you're alive, dude.
It's pretty crazy.
I'm happy I can do it so I can watch The Sopranos again.
Yeah.
Yay.
Hell yeah.
I mean, it's always good to just like have your company implode right after you have like a near-death experience.
Yeah.
I find.
The best. Love it. You love to see it.
You love to see it.
That was pretty baller. I don't think, I mean, when stuff started to go down and then everybody like immediately just rage quit.
Yeah, that was the coolest fucking thing ever.
Yeah, it was cool. I was like, this is punk and this is cool. Also, I need health insurance now.
Yeah. Well, that's like the
a little bittersweet.
Yeah, no, that's the downside of it for sure. But like there was definitely watching it all happen was the coolest thing. So being on the outside of it, I was like, these guys fucking rule.
Thank you. Well, I'll take that at face value, sir.
Yeah, it's like the I don't know, online writers equivalent of what's his name? Dave Chappelle cutting up that $50 million check and then, you know, leaving TV.
Definitely. We are the exact equal of Dave Chappelle. Exactly. In both stature, respect, and wealth.
Yeah. And, you know, in 10 years' time, you just move on to Barstool Sports because that's what he did politically. Anyways, we're just having a little bit of fun. I'm glad you're doing well, man.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, you live to pod another day.
Yeah, thanks for coming on with us.
Yeah.
And thanks, guys.
So, what's the Google voice number for the...
415-275-0030.
Yeah, please leave us a voicemail to, you know, any thoughts or concerns or questions about The Sopranos. And, you know, if you have just a favorite moment from The Sopranos you want to talk about, please let us know. Frogcast@gmail.com, patreon.com/frogcast. That's for our other podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time, don't stop believing.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.